This is Cityscape. I'm Steve Potter, and Radio Unnameable is a documentary film about Bob Fass, a legendary New York radio personality who pioneered what's called free-form radio. The film screens tonight and tomorrow at Webster University, and now we welcome the directors and producers, Jessica Wolfson and Paul Lovelace. Hi, welcome to you both.
Hi, thanks, Steve, for having us.
Thanks.
And I just want to make a correction, because earlier I'd been referring to him as Bob Foss, but the correct pronunciation is
Fass.
But it's not a name. Maybe that's a point. Even though this guy's been on the air for like 50 years and is worthy of a documentary, it's not a name the average person would know.
No. You know, he is the late night, midnight to 5 in the morning guy. So unless you are up during those hours, you may not have heard of him. But, you know, during his peak in the 1960s and 70s, he was the number one DJ in New York.
So he's like around 80 years old and he's still doing his thing.
For 50 years, yeah.
So a disc jockey in New York. And you say that he revolutionized radio. What do you mean by that, Paul?
Well, when Bob first started with this program, the FM dial, for one thing, there wasn't a lot on the FM dial.
No.
And after midnight, it just went silent. And he talked to the WBAI, the station that he has done his program from. He said, "Let me just stay on the air," because he was an announcer. "Let me stay on the air after midnight and let me see what I can do with this." And they gave him a shot, and he just decided his format would be no format. Just people could stop by, talk about whatever they wanted, musicians, political people, and
exactly the opposite of what radio is these days, because it's so formatted.
Exactly. You know, because it was a blank canvas, he had the ability to create as he went along. And so, you know, he would take callers. He would take 6 or 7 callers at a time, which had, you know, the technology was just so new at that point. And I don't really think anybody on radio really does that anymore.
I don't think so.
anymore. And he would have the callers talk to the guests. And the guests could be anyone from Bob Dylan to Abby Hoffman to other political or artists and musicians.
Right. It could be notable people like that or just people out of the blue. Let's show an example. This is a clip from your film, and your film is full of his archived work, correct?
Yes.
Let's hear this, and you can comment afterwards. This is Bob Fass taking a call on the air from a caller that's contemplating suicide.
Yeah.
People alone in their room with their radio make you feel, when they call, that you're needed. That you, in some cases, you feel like you're their only friend.
BAI.
Yeah. Listen, I always liked BAI.
Yeah?
Are you a gentleman?
I don't know what a gentleman means.
Well, I'm in the process of committing suicide, and maybe this would help BAI, you know, to collect money or something.
BAI was having a fund drive that wasn't terribly successful.
But don't turn me in or
well, I don't mean that.
On my number or anything like that.
You're in the process of committing suicide.
That's a crime.
That's a what?
It's
a crime? All my life I've wanted to commit a crime. At last I succeeded.
I didn't believe him, of course, at first. But I spoke to him and I didn't hang up on him for some reason.
Why? I mean, you know,
conjury of things, including a final rejection from a girlfriend, tried as all that.
Oh, well, that'll really teach her, won't it?
Teach her or me?
Her. It'll teach you, I guess.
Yeah, teach me.
How are you going to do it?
I've done it, I'm sorry to say.
What do you mean?
I've taken an amalgam of pills.
That's a clip from the documentary Radio Unnameable. Filmmakers Jessica Wolfson and Paul Lovelace are here. That's pretty incredible.
That's a very, and I will say most of the calls he gets are not quite that intense and harrowing. But that's a good example of, he doesn't screen his calls. Anyone can call at any time about anything.
And people might not realize it today when radio is so formatted. But, you know, radio began, it was very personal medium. And this certainly illustrates that.
Right. You know, especially in the middle of the night, the people who are listening, the people who are out there, you know, it's a very, very personal. They're, you know, they're at home in bed listening at night. They're at their jobs and right. empty office buildings or in cabs, you know. So it's a very one-on-one relationship.
How did Bob Fass get to this place? Number one, this was public radio, so this was not like a high-paying job. I know he studied acting earlier. How did he end up doing this?
He needed a job. He was in Three Penny Opera in Greenwich Village. It was ending, and he was a listener to WBAI, and he heard they were looking for announcers. And he went by and did a reading, and they hired him. And he was just an employee at the station, and they gave him a shot to try out this radio show.
And one of the things that's really special about him, Jessica, is how his show connected people.
Yeah, you know, what was really great is because he allowed people to call in and, you know, talk to everyone in the studio, he really allowed the listeners to take the direction of the show. So, you know, somebody would call in and report from the street. They would say, you know, there is a police riot going on in the corner, or I'm in the Bronx and it's January and my landlord's shut off my heat. What do I do? And then you'd have people calling in and say, oh, you can come stay at my house, or, oh, I'm a housing lawyer. Give me your number. Let me help. It was a real community that he had formed.
To illustrate that point, we have a clip from the film, and I believe this is something going on in New York Times Square. You can maybe tell us after we listen to it. But he's taking a call, and it sort of illustrates, you know, the citizen journalist type of thing. Let's listen.
The soldiers and the sailors that are here, they can't get over it. They're just so pleased with all the girls and all the
folks.
They
wonderful.
Want to know what's happening, you know?
Everything is beautiful here. It's unbelievably beautiful. They're throwing balloons up in the air. There was a soldier there, and people were just going up and shaking hands. He was so turned on by it. The vibrations are so beautiful, I can't describe it.
We just got a call from a guy who was in Penn Station.
Right.
And he said, where is everybody? Okay, keep in touch with us, Paul. Let us know what's happening.
Okay.
That's from Radio Unnamable. Any thoughts on that?
So that's actually at Grand Central Station in 1967. It's an event that Bob helped organize on the radio called the Yip-In, where it was one of the first happenings. He brought thousands of people showed up in Grand Central.
Yeah, and
to
he
have
was called
a
hippie before there were hippies, and
he was a yippie.
A yippie, right? And he did a big thing before that. I guess it was the Democratic National Convention in 68.
It was right
along these same lines.
This was right before the Democratic National Convention, where people went and, you know, stormed the city of Chicago. This was the first police riot leading up to that event.
What's fascinating to me, I've been doing radio 30 years, and if you're going to do a documentary about me, I don't know where we'd find stuff because I don't know that it exists. So I'm fascinated that there's all this archived material.
That was the initial challenge, right? I mean, it's a film about radio, essentially, and which is an oral medium. So we knew we were covered for audio, but visuals, we were able to track down a lot of unique and rare material that accented and really gave life to Bob's incredible radio archive.
And not only that, Bob has kept pretty much every recording of every show that he's ever done. And that's 50 years, 5 nights a week. Wow. So you can imagine these open reel cassettes that were living in his house that he had traveled.
Oh, they were reel to reel then.
Reel
to
reels and cassette tapes and as the formats, you know, progressed. So, you know, one of the big challenges that we had in addition to the visuals was going through and organizing this archive and finding this material, which was really so incredible.
We talked about how Bob Fass and his show connected people. We have a clip that will illustrate that, I think.
This program became more than a radio program. It was something that people who were up all night clung to.
I don't know whether it's a city's responsibility to do anything about loneliness, but sure is awful when a city creates loneliness here.
It's probably one of the most private relationships that I have. For, you know, like 3.5 hours, this man is right here.
We have this electronic nerve ending connection, even right now, you and I, over the telephone and over the radio. We're tied together by wires right now, you and me.
There's nothing like Bob on the radio, nothing.
We're talking with filmmakers Jessica Wolfson and Paul Lovelace. And you talked to a lot of people, and when you're making this documentary, a lot of the people that actually appeared on his program.
Yeah, Paul Krasner and many of the musicians, Arlo Guthrie and Jerry Jeff Walker, David Bromberg. You know, one of the amazing things for us in making this film is that we got to meet so many incredible people who were very, very important, you know, in this, even today.
And in the case of Arlo Guthrie, Alice's Restaurant was first performed publicly for the very first time on Radio Nameable, way before it was on a record. And, you know, to meet Arlo Guthrie and have him talk about that experiences and what it was like to go up in the show, you know, because we love his music as well. I mean, it was just, it was incredible.
We have, let's try to squeeze in one more clip. I think it'd be interesting. This is the man himself.
How do you like that silence? You'll never hear silence any place but WBAI. Sometimes it's, because something doesn't work, or someone is a little slow turning something on, or a mic isn't on. But to say that silence is golden is some way just the opposite of what radio feels in this country.
You know, when you study radio, that's what they tell you to avoid, the whole silence thing. But he made it work for him.
Yeah, because it was really just this visceral experience that he brings to the radio. You know, his silence, sometimes, as he says, is a mistake, but often it's very, you know, intentional and planned. And he, you know, will be quiet and see if the callers will actually keep talking or his guests will keep talking.
Webster University's film series presents Radio Unnameable with screenings tonight at 9:30. Tomorrow at 7:30, and Sunday at 7:30 as well?
Yes.
At Webster's Winifred Moore Auditorium on Lockwood. If you'd like more information, go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, and we'll have a link for further information. You both will be at both the evening screenings, I think.
We'll be in Friday and Saturday. We'll be there to do Q&As.
This is the first time you could see the film since it screened in New York, and you'll be taking it to around Missouri, I think.
Columbia and then Kansas City in the next week and then throughout the rest of the country.
And Jessica, you're from New York, but Paul, you grew up in Festus. Is that why you're screening here?
Well, I mean, that's partially, but it's also because St. Louis has a great radio tradition and Webster, the people who program, you know, they have great taste and we're really excited.
I think it's fascinating. Radio Unnameable. We want to thank Paul Lovelace, who you just heard, and Jessica Wolfson, the film's directors and producers. Thank you so much for sharing your work with us today.
Thanks for having us.